One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hey everyone, a quick announcement about our Patreon. If you're considering signing up and you're an iPhone user, please sign up using your computer at patreon.com/monstersamonguspodcast. Signing up on your computer avoids a new 30% fee that Apple is now charging supporters of independent podcasts, a punishment for using Patreon and not their own service. So again, use that computer to sign up to avoid a senseless fee. And thank you for the support. Good evening and welcome to Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. Welcome back to another horrifying installment of your favorite paranormal podcast. It's a damn pleasure to be sharing the digital airwaves with you here tonight, for I have a great little program slated for this evening. Ghost trains, grim reapers, long-limbed creatures, and maybe even a portal to another dimension. So lock the doors, dim the lights, buckle up and burn some sage, because we're diving in. And to kick us off this week, we begin on a bit of a down note. Now please welcome Bree from the state of California. And a quick trigger warning here. Bree does briefly discuss suicide in the following entry.
Hi, Derek. My name is Bree. I just want to start off by saying that I absolutely love your podcast. I listen to it every day, and I absolutely am so intrigued by everyone's personal ghost experience stories. This actually gave me the confidence to tell you my story today. I live in Thousand Oaks, California. I've lived there my whole life, and the date that I experienced my own little ghost encounter was back in December 1st, 2011. My dad was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at this time. And on this day, we woke up like any other day. I woke up, you know, did my normal stuff, getting ready for school. My dad was bedridden due to the cancer. So before I had left for school, I went in his room and I said my good mornings. You know, I love you so much. I'll see you after school, Dad. At this time, my dad didn't even respond to me. He had his back faced towards me and didn't say, I love you back, which I thought was very odd to start off with. I just, you know, brushed it off my shoulders, thought to myself that, you know what, I'm going to see you after school. So not a big deal. Maybe my dad just wasn't feeling good that morning. So I went to school, and immediately on my first class, I think that was around 8:30 in the morning, I had this like overwhelming feeling of just like desperation, like just sadness, desperation. I was very upset and I didn't know why. About 30 minutes later, I got called into our front office. And when I walked into the front office, there was a police officer waiting there for me. As a young 17-year-old girl, I'm thinking, oh my God, what did I get in trouble for? What did I do? They wouldn't tell me anything. They got me into the patrol car, took me back to my home. When I arrived to the home, I saw a whole bunch of chaos, a bunch of police cars, ambulances, everything was going on. And of course, I feared the worst. When I walked into my house, I saw my mother on the couch, and immediately they had told me, I'm so sorry for your loss. Come to find out, my dad had committed suicide that morning. I was absolutely devastated. We were all devastated, of course, with any loss that you would have in a family. That afternoon, once they took out the body and, you know, we had family over, everyone was coming over to consolidate us, be there to support us. My aunt had told me, you know what? Let's go into your bedroom. I want you to go in your bedroom and just see if there was anything that your dad may have left behind, such as a note. I walked into my bedroom and it was immediately drawn to my dresser. When I looked up towards my dresser, I saw a tiny little box. I opened that box and I've never seen it before. There was a bunch of money in it. I automatically thought, you know what, this came from my dad. He was saying his goodbyes. He wanted to leave me some money. But as I turned around to go ahead and show my aunt this box that my dad had left me, and I wanted to let her know there was no note, from my left-hand side, or my left side of where I can see, I saw a large ball, orange ball of light just fly by me, coming through my room, out my window that was on my right-hand side. I know this is a very short ghost story, but I believe that that was my dad's soul, and I believe that was him saying goodbye to me during that time. Again, Derek, thank you so much for your time and for listening to my story. I know it was very short, but I just wanted to let you guys know of my experience that I had.
Thank you, Bree. How awful. Now, I'm sorry for your loss and that you had to endure those events. Having suffered through something quite similar, you have my sympathy. Now, as for the experience itself, what do we think, folks? Did Bree's father stick around long enough to ensure that she found the money that he left for her? Is that what she saw out of the corner of her eye? Or was this orange orb just an unfortunately timed coincidence? Well, even if it wasn't related, there's still no logical explanation as to why an orange orb of light would be shooting through someone's bedroom. Now, regardless of the explanation, it sounds like Bree is pretty certain of what she saw. And given the timing and circumstances surrounding the odd occurrence, I'd have to say I agree. Thank you again, Bree, for ringing in. Now, folks, if you have a tale you would like told on the show, give my hotline a ring at 888-608-NIGHT. That's 888-608-NIGHT. Or record a voice memo on your telephone and email it to me at monstersamonguspodcast@gmail.com. Remember to call from a quiet room. Finish your story, even if that means you have to call back and pick up where you left off. Oh, and make sure the story is true. There are some great podcasts out there that play fictional stories, but Monsters Among Us is not one of them. Now on to the program and on to our next entry. A two-parter from Jack down in Australia.
Okay, Derek, my name's Jack. I'm from Australia. Really enjoy the show. Got two stories for you. One is like a black figure I saw when I was younger. And then another one is just like a ghost, I guess you'd say. So I'll start off with the black figure. I remember one night I was trying to sleep in my mum's room because I was scared to sleep in my main bedroom at the time. Would always have night traumas. And I remember lying in her bed about to go to sleep. There's still a light on outside of the room. And I saw this tall figure. It was all black. It had like super long arms and super long legs. And its torso was like up super high. And it had just this little head. And it like moved and ducked under the door frame and came into the bedroom, like to have a look, to have a gaze, and then ducked and went out. And I screamed. I would have screamed my lungs out as a young boy. And the other story I have is when I was about 19 years old, I was in a pastry chef, so an apprentice baker. And after night shift one night, I was living in a house with a few friends. There's probably like five or six of us living there, and I'd woken up after just falling asleep, maybe like half an hour after just falling asleep, and I turned away from the wall. I was facing the wall and I slept. I turned away from the wall to just face the bedroom, and there was this man with a no shirt on. He might have had shorts on. I just remember his upper half. He was like really malnourished, and he had heaps of tattoos over his body and over his head. He had a shaved head, so he looked like, yeah. And I just remember just yelling or screaming and kicking in the direction of where he was sitting in my room on the floor. And mind you, I had a mattress. I wasn't up on a bed. So when I woke up, I was on floor level, and I turned over and he was right there in front of my eyes. And I would have kicked or punched and hit this TV unit that was sitting behind where he was. And so I knocked that over. TV fell over, broke, and caused a bit of a ruckus in the house. Everyone got up and I was explaining it to them. No one believed me. So yeah, those are my two experiences. I hope you can use this for the show. I really, really enjoy the show and the work that you do, mate. The whole layout of the podcast is unreal. I look forward to each episode every week. Good job. Take it easy, mate. Bye.
Thank you, Jack. Now, that first story sounded like, well, nightmare fuel, frankly. And the second, well, it's always good to hear about a ghost that's not some stuffy white guy in a suit or some stuck-up lady in a white dress. After all, if ghosts are real, we have to assume that people of all shapes, sizes, colors, and creeds would be represented in spirit form. So thank you again, Jack, for sharing your entry and those terrifying experiences. Now, folks, don't go anywhere. I'll be right back with more eerie entries right after this.
For a second, I had to think about that. Like, surely
it's here, sure, but Stike, it doesn't seem.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
Exceeded all expectations. So let's say they win one playoff game and then.
Now, next up, we visit the state of Nevada, where Yaz has a gruesome little entry for us.
Hi, Derek. My name is Yaz. I live in Las Vegas. And I did just want to tell a story that happened in high school. Just to preface, ever since I was little, I have always seen and felt things in my home growing up, but it kind of had stopped once I had gone into middle school, and I really hadn't seen anything up until about high school, my junior year. And during this time, I don't really remember if I was under extreme stress, and that's maybe why something was visiting me, but I do believe that I was visited by the Grim Reaper. So it was one evening, I remember I was out asleep. I was in a solid sleep, and I was woken up kind of abruptly. That's what it felt like. And I had shared a bedroom with my mom at the time, but I had my own little bed that faced into the hallway. And through the hallway, you could see the kitchen. And I remember I was waking up and just staring into the hallway because it was spooky, because you're a little kid. And this particular night, I had woken up from this solid sleep, felt like something had woken me up, and I went to turn over and look into the hallway, and as I looked past the hallway, I was looking into the kitchen, and there appeared to be a solid black figure that stood almost to the ceiling, and I just remember being petrified. I could still move. I just chose not to move. And this solid black figure, as I looked at it closer, I realized it had had a hood, but it was more so the side profile that I was seeing. So I was seeing some cloaked figure, and I just remember telling myself, this is real. You have to pay attention to what's happening. And as I looked even longer, I had noticed that it was holding a staff in its right hand. And I could see the silhouette of the staff and the cloak and everything. And I just remember thinking, since it was nighttime, this figure was darker than the area around it, darker than the night. At the time, I thought, you know, maybe the light's playing with me because I woke up from sleep and whatever. But I had stared at this thing for so long, and it stayed there for a really long time until I just fell asleep. Because I remember thinking to myself as well that I can't show it fear. And this, to me, seems like it is the Grim Reaper. But I can't show fear because, you know, maybe it'll act out towards me or whatever. But I ended up just falling asleep. And I didn't feel the need to wake my mom up or anything because I knew what I was seeing at the time because I've always kind of seen things, but I had just never seen what appears as the Grim Reaper. And shortly after, I was on edge because I was afraid something would happen to family members or it was a sign, an omen, whatever, and nothing did happen. So I'm not too sure what that was, but it was definitely terrifying. But I just wanted to say thank you for your time, and hopefully you guys have a great rest of your night. Thank you.
Thank you, Yas. A Grim Reaper in the kitchen. I did not have that on my bingo card. But you know, I've shared a story or two over the years that seem to detail the exact same thing that Yaz saw. Down to the stick, staff, scythe, whatever it was in its hand. But is it really the Grim Reaper? Or just another cloaked entity? Whatever it was that surprised you that evening, Yaz, we can't thank you enough for telling us about it. Thank you again for calling in. Now folks, before we load this next entry, a quick reminder that you can pick up all sorts of Monsters Among Us themed gear over in our merch shop. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and click the shop tab. And did I mention all our products make great stocking stuffers? Support the show and look good doing it. Just visit monstersamonguspodcast.com and smash that shop tab. Now this next one takes us to the Pacific Northwest. Steve, thank you for joining us here this evening.
Hi, Derek. My name's Steve, and I'd like to tell you about something that happened to me when I was 13 years old in 1981. We lived in St. Helens, Oregon, and my father worked at the police department there in that town. And as anybody who has parents or is a police officer, they always have, or at least our way of life growing up was, there was always a police scanner going and it was really loud. So anytime there was an occurrence that happened in town, the scanner would blast off. It was, again, like I said, 1981. I don't know the exact day, but it's documented and you can look it up online. But the scanner went kicking off, and there was all this chatter about a UFO over the river in downtown St. Helens. I remember sitting up in bed, listening to the scanner, and I remember my father getting out of bed and going out and listening to the scanner and starting to call people on the phone, trying to find out what was going on. That was like 4 a.m. And either that day or the next day, the officer who saw the occurrence came over to our house, and my father was having a discussion with him. He sent us to our room to get us out of their hair because me and my brother were like, oh my goodness, a UFO, really? You know, and questioning. His name was Russ Yoakum, and he was like a friend of the family, and we were like, Russ, what was it? What did you see? Tell us, Russ, tell us. And that's when my dad basically told us Amscray and sent us to our room. So we listened through the crack of the door, and my father could not accept that Russ Yoakum saw a UFO. So he was like, Russ, you have to be mistaken. What is it that you really saw? Russ, are you pulling my leg? Russ, You have to be mistaken. And I remember Russ saying over and over, I know what I saw. It wasn't from this planet. I can't explain what it was. Anyway, that was many, many years ago. Like I said, I was 13. And this was back in 1981. A couple weeks ago, I ran into another friend of the family who was also on the police force at that time. And I asked him a couple weeks ago, I said, hey, all this about the UFO, what do you think about it? What do you know? And he said, Steve, that was a hoax. They were pulling our legs. I'm like, why do you say that? And he said, because that can't exist. So just like my father, who is now passed, God rest his soul, this other gentleman my father worked with just can't accept that this could possibly be something unknown. And Russ Yocum is now gone as well. But you can find this documented online. Just look up St. Helens UFO sighting, 1981, Russ Yocum. And you can hear what they recorded. Basically, there was a guy that lived across the river from St. Helens who, back then, it was all big CB. This guy was a big CB guy who was still awake at 4 in the morning when this happened. They were all watching it. This one guy named Lucky was on the other side of the river in Ridgefield, which is just across the river from St. Helens. Russ was on the St. Helens side down at the river side by the courthouse. And he was talking to Lucky on the CB, and Lucky could hear it. Russ could not. So Lucky keyed up his CB, and Russ had a tape recorder going so he could get the audio of it. I've listened to it over and over, and it's really bad quality. Of course, it's 1981. But anyway, I thought you might enjoy our UFO sighting down in St. Helens, Oregon. And I thought I'd share. All right, thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Steve. Now, if you're a supporter of our Beyond After Show, this story just might sound familiar to you, because I covered it back on Season 17, Episode 10. But certainly not from this angle. Steve was part of all of this. He had Russ Yocum right there in his living room. His father knew the other witnesses, and they heard this all go down over the radio. So talk about being part of history. Now, I know a lot of you are curious about these sounds the supposed UFO made as it was landing or taking off or whatever the hell it was doing. Well, don't worry. I'll feed you, baby bird. As Steve had mentioned, the audio quality here, well, it stinks. It's real bad, in fact. But I did my best to clean it up for the Beyond episode earlier this year. But upon giving it a re-listen, I thought, I can do better than this. So I gave the file another pass, and here is the result. And I think it might be the clearest version of this recording that you'll find to date. So the following was recorded on March 17, 1981, alongside the Columbia River, as UFO activity danced overhead.
Hey, Lucky.
Now, if you can't hear it, the men are discussing how they have a tape recorder ready, and that they fear people might think them crazy if they didn't. Then, Yocum describes an orange glow in the sky, as they argue whether or not it might be the rising sun. Then, Sergeant Russell Yocum says, "Listen, and holds his mic outside the car to record the noise. And the actual sound you hear toward the end is the sound the UFO was emitting that evening. Now, whatever's going on here, it is eerie stuff. And the recording kind of sends chills down my spine. And we thank you again, Steve, for giving me a fresh opportunity to share this infamous recording and the story of Sergeant Russell Yoakum and what he saw that evening. Thank you again for calling in.
Must qualify for enrollment. Results be there.
The right choice for talk.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.
Kosai.org. I think that every week I stay up, I just want to watch.
It's always close. Some teams you're really right.
Now, something I'd always heard about ghosts growing up is that they can't hurt you. I remember being afraid of the ghost that we thought was in my grandmother's house growing up. And she'd say something to the effect of, "Oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's only Charlie. He can't hurt you." Well, for the longest time, I thought maybe Grandma was right. Then I heard Chris's entry out of Pennsylvania.
Hey, Derek. My name is Chris, and I'm calling in from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I'm actually a host of a paranormal podcast called The Wandering Road, but my story takes place in Queens, New York, in the late 90s and early 2000s. So I grew up in a haunted house there. And I experienced a plethora of things that happened in that house while living there. And I wanted to share one of the encounters that we had with you today. So essentially, when we moved into that house, like in the late 90s, I would say 98 to 99 or so, we would hear footsteps in the attic. Things would knock on our door. There would be no one there. There were a couple of times where some electronics would, you know, just turn on their own. Like, for example, the old stereo system that we had would turn on its own, and then we unplugged it and it would still turn on. Even when replacing it, we would still have like electronic issues. But the main thing that I wanted to talk about was when whatever demon or ghost or whatever is still in that home today got physical with my aunt. So it had to have been probably 2004 or so. It was sometime in the summer. And I remember this vividly because it was just so shocking. My mom witnessed it, my sister witnessed it, and of course my aunt was the one that experienced it. So to paint a quick picture, our kitchen is right next to a hallway that leads to our bathroom, which is to the left of the hallway, and straight down the hallway a few feet is my parents' room, slight diagonally to the right, and then my room, slight diagonally to the left. And the bathroom door faces parallel with the closet door, with maybe 4 to 5 feet, I would say, separating the two. So I'm standing in the kitchen, like at the entrance of the hallway. My mom is standing right next to me. My aunt walks out of my parents' bedroom door. She turns right to go into the bathroom. She opens the door, and then she gets violently shoved into the closet door. She gets shoved, I would say, a good 3 to 4 feet or whatever. And I couldn't explain it. She was lifted off like a good foot off of the ground and like violently hit that door. And, you know, me being a teen at the time in my early teens and my sister being 5 years younger than me, my mom has 2 young kids in the house. She has no idea how to handle this. So she decides to make the joke that maybe the ghost had to use the restroom, and that is why my aunt got shoved out of the way. So at that point, we had been living in the house for at least, I would say, minimum of 4 to 5 years or so. And when that event took place, I believe it was in the summer, and we've always had our air conditioning running, so all the windows were closed. There was no draft or any type of wind or something like that that would have pushed her that violently into the closet door at such a great length and having her lift off a foot off the ground. So I just wanted to call back and share further context with that. But another creepy thing that happened in that home that I wanted to share with you and your listeners is that towards the end of our stay in that home, we moved out in February of 2007. So a few months before we moved out, my mother is a devout Catholic. I was raised Catholic. Within the household itself, it was a two-family home, but I have family members living there that are Muslim, whatever. So my mom, one weekend on a Saturday, decided she was going to go around, you know, saying a prayer, burning sage, you know, kind of blessing the home. So she went through the upstairs. We stayed upstairs, and it was a duplex, two-family home. She went to each room, cleansing and praying, whatever. So she gets downstairs, and she asks my uncle, who's a Muslim, if it was okay for her to do this, to go and, you know, do blessing with sage and do some cleansing. He didn't really care. So she goes into the home. She starts at the front of the apartment, and then she moves to the living room, praying and doing the cleansing with sage, dining room, kitchen, computer room. She gets to my uncle's bedroom. Everything is fine. Then she gets to my cousin's room. And it was at that point she said that the air started to get really thick, to the point where she felt super uncomfortable and that something was choking her. She felt like she was being choked and she had to leave the room. Again, this didn't happen in any other room of the house, only that one. And oddly enough, that night she had a dream of an old woman yelling at her, saying that she's going to kill her entire family, that this was her house, and she has no right to try and cast anyone out of this home. And mind you, in the dream, my mom was dreaming that she was in her bed, in her bedroom, while this happened, while she was having this dream. I don't know what it was, Derek. It wasn't very happy with what she was trying to do. And it's not the first time that this thing, or whatever it was, demon or whatever, got violent with us. But yeah, thank you for allowing me to share my story, and I'll probably call back with more.
Thank you, Chris. Your poor aunt. It seems that that thing really had it out for her. But believe it or not, her experience pales in comparison to other violent ghost cases throughout history. The infamous Bell Witch haunting, for example. The Bell family reported flying furniture, clothing ripped off by unseen hands, slapping, pinching, hair pulling. And it's widely believed that the ghost murdered the patriarch of the family, forcing John Bell to down a vial of poison. But that's still not the worst of the worst. That title might be reserved for a poor soul from South America. In 1965, a young woman named Maria Jose Ferreira from Chapadacabal, Brazil, was subject to extreme poltergeist activity. Large stones were thrown at Maria. Furniture was thrown around her bedroom. She was relentlessly bitten and suffocated. And one morning, she awoke to needles embedded so deeply in her skin that they required a doctor's assistance to be removed. According to a local medium, Maria had been a witch in her previous life, and the attacks were unleashed upon Maria by a former victim. The haunting was so distressing that Maria ended her own life at the young age of 16. And this is why we take the phenomena so seriously here on the show. Because it might not be real for a lot of people, but to folks like poor Maria, it very much was. So thank you again, Chris, for swinging by and sharing the tale.
When he entered the league to where he is,
it's a work zone for the 57
of... With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
That's it. He doesn't need...
On with your loud weekly haircut. We will be listening to that.
This next story takes us to the tracks. In New Jersey, specifically. Nova, welcome to tonight's program.
Hi, my name is Nova. I'm from New Jersey. This is a story of a scene that my mom has seen and something that I have partially seen myself. Behind my house where I live, there is an old abandoned train track. You can tell it hasn't been in use for years. There's trees growing through the tracks, weeds, all that type of stuff. I used to do a little bit of research on these tracks, and apparently they were used by the Blue Comet, but I'm not sure whether or not to believe that. I've been listening to your show, I've been binging the episodes, and I actually just drove past the tracks, which reminded me of the story. So one day my mom, I believe she was looking out the window, because we have a little bit of woods back there, and you can see the train tracks right from the window. And my mom swears to this day that she heard a train horn. Now, like I said, these train tracks haven't been in use for years, so hearing a train horn is a little odd, at least around in this area. We don't have any trains that run through this part of New Jersey, other than the New Jersey Transit, which is not close to us at all. And when she heard that, she walked out to the porch, and saw this image of a train. And she was telling me that this train actually had a couple missiles on it. And what confuses me is we live by a base. And the train tracks do go to the base, but where she saw this train, there was overgrowth. So there was no way this train would be able to go through this overgrowth without, you know, breaking it. And going outside, looking at the tracks, the overgrowth was still there. And that leads me to my story. I was out by the train tracks taking a couple pictures because my friend and I, we were aspiring photographers. And I remember seeing, like, train lights on the train track. And I remember telling my friend, I'm like, hey, I don't know if that's a car. I don't know if that's a train, but we probably shouldn't be back here, so let's go back to the apartment and whatnot. We didn't go back to the apartment. We just kind of sat by the dumpster close to the entrance of these train tracks, and we gave it about 5-10 minutes. No train passed, no car passed. We walked back, and those lights are completely gone. We tracked up the dirt road that we saw the lights kind of coming from, and there was zero, like, tire markings in the sand, nothing, no footsteps. So I'm not sure if we saw a ghost train that day, but I would like to do a little bit more research into what we saw that day, what my mom saw that day. But thank you for your podcast. I enjoyed listening to it. It's my number one podcast right now while I'm at work. Thank you so much, Derek.
Thank you, Nova. Now, you might not believe this, but the Garden State is well known for a phantom locomotive. They call it the Newark Ghost Train. And here are all the highlights neatly packaged by Rove Dragon on YouTube.
There's something sinister lurking in the shadows of the Broad Street Station in Newark. Legend has it, on the stroke of midnight on the 10th of every month, the silence of the night is shattered by the ear-piercing squeal of a phantom train. Locals tell of a spectral locomotive, its engine roaring to life, pulling into the station as if from thin air. It's a ghost train, forever bound to repeat its final tragic journey. Witnesses describe an ethereal glow emanating from the train, a chilling beacon in the darkness. Some say it's the souls of those who perished in a terrible wreck, doomed to roam the tracks for eternity.
Now you're not gonna believe this part either. An investigator by the name of David M. Rowntree claims he has caught the lonesome whistle of that ghost train on tape. Here's that infamous EVP that was captured on the platform for Track 1 inside Pennsylvania Station there in Newark, New Jersey, all the way back in 2001. If you think this recording sounds a bit fake, you're not alone. So do I. And so do many other researchers and train experts. And some of these experts actually claim that the sound matches up perfectly to a popular model train. Now either way, this does not sound like the locomotive that Noah's mom had witnessed that evening. But there is one other suspect we should explore. During the Cold War, New Jersey was home to 14 Nike missile bases that protected the state from Soviet attack. And the missiles that armed those bases were transferred there via freight train. But not just any freight train. They call it the United States Department of Energy Nuclear Weapons Transport Train, but most know it simply as the White Train. Now, it was used throughout the Cold War to transport nukes all over the country, including New Jersey. So is it possible that Noah's mother saw a residual-style haunting of this infamous train? A ghost image, if you will. Well, either way, thank you again, Nova, for sharing that awesome entry. Now I have one more story to share with you this evening. But first, we have to pay a couple of bills.
Alive if we could get some more
cast the characters, the guys, and really deeper.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In The News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now this last one is super weird, but you don't have to take my word for it. Kim from Virginia, welcome to tonight's program.
Hi, Derek. This is Kim, and I'm calling from Virginia. This is my own experience that comes from, I'd say, 2008, 2007, somewhere around there. And it was in the month of October. I know that. my family and I, and at the time that was my husband and myself and our two children, who at that time were about 8 and 11, we decided to take a weekend trip to Colonial Williamsburg, which is about 3 hours away from us. So I had gone to school in Williamsburg. Every summer that I was there, I worked in Colonial Williamsburg, either doing hostessing at taverns or that kind of thing. In any case, I knew Williamsburg very well, and it was always a place that I enjoyed going back to, and still to this day I do. So at that point, we were interested in taking a ghost tour, which was sort of a new feature at that time. And we started out walking with, I guess, about 15 other people, maybe. It started, I think, around 7:30-ish, so it was getting on the dark side, if it wasn't already dark. And it was a really good tour. It was all walking tour up and down the streets of Williamsburg. And toward the end of the tour, I got a pebble in my shoe, and it was driving me nuts. So I told my family to go on with the group, and I would sit down on a bench and untie my shoe and get this thing out. So they went on ahead, and I sat down on a bench and proceeded to untie my shoe so I could shake it out. So I want to just let you know where I was sitting at the moment. That was, if you are standing on Duke of Gloucester Street, which is the main drag there in Colonial Williamsburg. It's commonly called Dog Street. And you're facing the Capitol, where Patrick Henry made his impassioned speech. I was sitting in what was then a sort of a vacant lot that acted as a crossroads to the left of the Capitol. And that area was sort of an open area. At the time, I think it still is. I haven't been down there recently. But in any case, I was sitting on a bench that was facing the Capitol. So I was facing one side of the Capitol, and I'm dealing with my shoe. I finally get it tied, and everything is set to go. And I look up, and there I saw the most bizarre thing that I've ever seen in my life. I have no idea what it was. I can only describe it to you. It was roughly the size of a small movie theater screen and sort of that shape, sort of a rectangular shape, floating about 4 feet off the ground. It was static in the sense that this frame didn't move, but inside of it, there was a very dynamic, I don't know how to explain it. There was a lot going on. A predominantly currents of what looked like molten lava that glowed fluorescent green and occasionally some yellow as it moved around within this frame. And I thought, okay, you know, I'm on a ghost tour. This seems like a trick or a practical joke. I don't know how anybody could pull this off. So I know, just to kind of clear my mind, I closed my eyes and I opened them again, and it was still there. And it must have been about 40 feet away from me. I watched this thing, this sort of glowing currents of stuff flowing around, flashing, mostly green, but flashing yellow here and there because of dynamic changes that were happening, movements that were happening with this substance that was inside this frame. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was just surreal. I thought, you know, this is not a projection. I kept trying to reason with it. Is it a projection? No. There were no light beams coming out. There were no light beams going in. There was nothing behind it that could have been supporting a screen. It was outside in the middle of Colonial Williamsburg. And there weren't any apparatus type things that set up lights that would create an effect like this. The only thing that I think was providing light at that time may have been the torches that they do light occasionally at the nighttime when it gets dark in Williamsburg. So I looked at it and I stared at it and I kept thinking, what is this? A little voice came into my head. It could have been my own voice that said, go put your hand in it. Go up to it and
put your hand in it. And I decided that I wasn't going to do that, that wasn't probably a good idea. And the more I looked at it, the more uncomfortable I became, because I kept wondering what it was, why it was there, why it appeared that I was the only one who could see it. And at the time, there really weren't many people around, but there were people around, kind of milling around, not necessarily right close to me, but, you know, up on Duke of Gloucester Street, there were people. But you kind of have to be facing this thing because it's flat in order to see it. So I wasn't aware of anyone else in the area that would have seen this or could have seen this. And of course, my cell phone at the time was not capable of taking pictures, or if it was, I didn't know how to do it. So I kept staring at it. I didn't hear anything. I didn't smell anything. I didn't feel trepidation or fear until, I guess, a couple minutes after I stared at it. And I thought, there's something not right here. I kind of felt like it was staring back at me, which is kind of some kind of psychological phenomenon, I guess, when you don't know what you're looking at and it doesn't go away and it's right smack in front of you. So I turned my back. I was so uncomfortable and I left. I didn't even look back to see if it was still there. I caught up with the group and I didn't talk about it with anybody for a while. I did mention it to my family later on when I was able to talk about it, but it was just too weird. I don't know if anyone else has had an experience like this. I couldn't call it a UFO, but I would call it an unidentified floating object. I also would like to know if anyone has had any experiences similar to this in Colonial Williamsburg. I'd spent a lot of time in Williamsburg and I never had any paranormal experiences. The only strange experiences I had were with people who visited Williamsburg. So I hope that you're able to use this for your show, Derek. I really, really appreciate it. And hello to all you Monsters Among Us fans out there. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Kim. Now, you know, sometimes the absence of paranormal activity can be just as telling as the existence of it. And the sentiment might perfectly describe Colonial Williamsburg. Now, we didn't find much of anything even similar to what Kim had described. We searched for UFO sightings, because obviously this sounds like alien technology. But we found nothing of note that would suggest that that was the origin of the weird object Kim saw. And that's when we pivoted our attention to Bigfoot, because some people say that the big guy hops in and out of portals. So if there's a surprising amount of Bigfoot reports from that area, well, it could bridge some sort of connection. But again, we struck out. Nothing of note found. Then that got me thinking about time slips, or some sort of portal that allows people to stumble through, taking them to some other time or place. But again, nothing found there either. But there was one anomaly that popped up for us a number of times. Something a little more scientific, believe it or not. Colonial Williamsburg is located on the 37th parallel, an imaginary line that stretches across the country and around the world. A line that happens to fall directly where countless UFO experiences have occurred. They call it the Alien Highway for a reason. And according to the North American Magnet Anomaly Map, Colonial Williamsburg also has a high ranking for geomagnetic anomalies. And if you've seen any 80s teen sci-fi thriller, you know that is a direct correlation to portals to the unknown. But seriously, magnetic energy is powerful magic, so who's to say it can't open something like this up? Well, since we didn't really solve anything here, I'll leave you with what my brain keeps repeating to myself. What would have happened if she put her hand inside? Would it have taken her someplace else? Would she have been completely fine? Or would that have unleashed a hell that we cannot even imagine? Either way, thank you, Kim, for sharing this gem. I have no idea what it was, but I'm very interested in learning more. So thank you again for setting up that search, Kim. And thanks for calling in tonight. And there you go, folks. That's this week's effort. I hope you had a good time rummaging through these strange and unusual entries. Big as I sure did. Now be sure to join us back here on Tuesday for the next Tuesday installment. We're going places in this upcoming episode. Spooky places. But until then, Monsters Among Us podcast is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Copyright Red Crow Media. Additional support is provided by Sarah Carter Hayes and Delaney Bowers. All media used in this production is done so under the protection of fair use. Be sure to keep the conversation rolling over at Instagram and Facebook. And while you're at it, join us at YouTube for a like and follow. Let's help that page grow a little, shall we? And since you're online messing around, why don't you leave us a rate and review? That sort of thing goes a long, long way to help the show grow. At least that's what they tell us. Don't forget you can catch the show digitally every Saturday evening at 11 p.m. Eastern by visiting unxnetwork.com. And finally, tonight's score was provided by Iron Cthulhu Apocalypse, Code IDG Music, and Carl Casey at White Bat Audio. Now stick around until after the outro and the ad to learn how you can get more Monsters Among Us 100% free. Until then, keep it spooky. Have yourselves a good night.
In order for him to crack
800 weapons. That off-ramp remains
closed. Now celebrating.
Radically change four.
So maybe that's what.
Now you know how I like to play this. The secret story is reserved for the weirdest and most bizarre experiences out there. And this next one falls squarely within those confines. Please welcome Mike to tonight's program.
Hey, Derek and the rest of the Monsters Among Us team. This is Mike, and I'm just calling with another story. It's kind of a weird one. Not even sure if you can use it, but here it goes. So I was getting up for work about 2:45 in the morning. I dressed after I took a shower, came out into the kitchen, grabbed my phone to plug it into a charger and set it down on the counter in front of me. Again, this is about 3 in the morning. There's nobody awake in the house but me and the dogs. And so I take them and I make their food, I feed them, and I come back to check my phone. And the weirdest thing is there is a fingernail sitting on my phone. No one else is awake in the house. My house is very rickety and I can hear almost anybody coming from any direction in the house. Floorboards creak. You know, again, 3 o'clock in the morning, people are going to be stumbling around. Nobody. And there's just a obvious fingernail sitting on my phone, and I can't explain it because I looked at my fingernails and all my fingernails were clipped, and just really a weird one. I've got a couple other stories I'll call back with, but thanks for your time. Bye.
Thank you, Mike. That's not unnerving in the slightest. You know, it's bad enough that something could suddenly appear like that, but for it to be someone else's fingernail, maybe even toenail, that kind of thing could ruin your weekend. Now, God forbid this happens again, Mike. But if it does, my suggestion is to start a little collection. See how many you can accumulate. Maybe you'll get a jar full. Then what you do is you list it on eBay for big bucks. Haunted toenail collection. I can see it now. And it might even be a buyer. But all joking aside, I'd have trouble sleeping in that house, Mike, knowing someone or something is out there leaving little messages for you to find. So thank you again for a story that I'll surely be thinking about at 3 in the morning. All right, folks, we've reached the point in the program where we go beyond the after show, where we share additional calls and tell additional stories. And joining us is simple. Visit patreon.com and search for Monsters Among Us podcast. Then click the $5 level to join us. There is also a $1 ad-free level there as well if you're interested. Or you can click the subscribe button at the bottom of our homepage on Apple Podcasts. Either one gives you instant access to days worth of material dating back years. And you can do it all for free if you want, for 7 whole days using either feature's free trial. So what are you waiting for? You're missing out on fun things like tonight's special episode, where I give you, the listener, an opportunity to make corrections, suggestions, and remarks in our latest rebuttal episode. For example, calls like this one from our buddy Sam, a super talented artist. Check him out on the Instagrams if you haven't already. Here he is, out of Pennsylvania.
Hey, this is Sam Heimer out of Philadelphia. I'm actually calling in response to Colin's call, also from Philadelphia, on the most recent episode. This is kind of fresh in my head because I saw all the same thing 2-3 nights ago and knew exactly what it was. But the fire in the sky, he potentially saw that.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.